Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime, in your browser, on the internet at WFPR.FM, and in the Franklin, Mass. FM radio dial 102.9. Yeah, the dial, the buttons, maybe a knob. Preset it to 102.9. That's the number. It'll always be ready for you. Here today, virtually, with our state rep, Jeff Roy. Jeff, good morning. Happy Thursday. How are you doing?
Good morning, Steve. Doing great. Running around, doing a lot of end of session work and meeting with constituents. Keep up with the work as we approach the end of our legislative session, which is scheduled for July 31, 2026.
So you've slid it to July 31 as opposed to the fiscal year, June 30.
Yes, the budget is supposed to be wrapped up by June 30th,
right.
But the actual legislative session is July 31. But I don't want to get it too much into the weeds, but we did change the rules at the beginning of this session to say that if there are bills that have been passed by both branches and they're in a conference committee, then they don't have to be done by July 31. They can take us all the way into January of 2027 to get finished up. So that's a remarkable new change with the rules that started for this session. So we're going to see it tested this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because on the one hand, yeah, if a bill comes up on one side or the other side, I mean, you got two different groups, House, Senate. But then if it gets to conference, giving them that extra time to work through the negotiations and coming up with that compromise, that makes sense to my point of view. Yeah.
Yeah, it was tough when you would get to the last day of the session, July.
Right.
Oftentimes it would go well into the night and sometimes into the next morning.
Mm-hmm. I've heard some of those, you know, done. 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning closing out things.
Well, Steve, I will tell you, there was one year it was 10:30 in the morning. So I had
in the
slept
morning
for 36 hours.
Ouch.
I was a little tired then.
Yeah, yeah.
But we won't have that anymore.
Good, good. Yeah. You know, when you're fresher of mind, then you can make some really intelligent choices as opposed to, wait a minute, what did we say? I'm trying to remember. So amongst the key pieces, certainly, and at this point, you've been working on the budget for a bit. Certainly the governor started with her release in January.
Yes.
You did yours in April, if I recall. The Senate just released theirs a couple of weeks ago. And now the Senate version and your version are coming together in that conference committee in order to give the state, you know, a final budget view.
Yes, indeed. And it was a tough budget year. We were all prepared for, tough choices to be made. And we did make some tough choices, but we did pass a budget that really responds to the needs of the residents and provides a lot of support out there for cities and towns. And there's significant funding in there for education, transportation, healthcare, housing, and workforce development. And we did get a number of earmarks for Franklin. And those are dollars that will go to help specific programs in the community that may not have all of the financial support they need. So the state is going to come in, kick in some money. I think probably the most exciting thing for Franklin, Franklin is a hold harmless town.
Yes.
In the Commonwealth for Chapter 70 education funding.
Mm-hmm.
So Franklin only receives minimum aid, but this year we increased the amount of minimum aid to $160 per student.
160.
Ooh, 160.
Okay. Yeah.
So that means Franklin's going to get an additional $757,000 in education funding, which will bring that number up to $31,218,083. So mm-hmm. That's significant. And then the earmarks include money for the Safe Coalition, the Food Pantry, the Children's Museum, Franklin Performing Arts, Franklin Downtown Partnership, and a new business in town, Franklin Creative Center for the Arts.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some earmarks. And one pet project, actually two pet projects of mine include the Genocide Education Act. We have put $500,000 into the trust fund for genocide education, and manufacturing is another big area for me. And we included $2 million for the Massachusetts Manufacturing Extension Partnership, who just yesterday celebrated their 30th anniversary of serving small and medium-sized manufacturers in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, which the small and medium manufacturers are the backbone of our economy. 72% of the manufacturers in Massachusetts have under 25 employees. And the Mass MEP is the group that helps them survive and thrive in Massachusetts. And at that same ceremony where we celebrated the 30th anniversary, we recognized a manufacturer with the Jack Healey Award, which gives recognition for somebody who's been outstanding in the field of manufacturing. And guess what? It was John Berg and Carpe Diem from Franklin, Massachusetts,
So cool.
recognized statewide as the Jack Healey Award winner this year.
Yes. Yeah. I'll have he's been on my want to talk to list for a while, so maybe there's another opportunity to, hey, let's talk.
You know, and when you see him, you know, he'll talk about his great company that he has down on Cottage Street, but be sure to ask him about what his involvement with the World Trade Center is in
Yes.
New York.
That's one of the stories that has sparked my interest a while ago. Yes.
It
Yep.
was it's amazing how he tells it that the employees who could not get that light in place, and I don't want to spoil it for
No.
anybody,
Yep.
but he actually had to get out there himself and climb that pole 1776 feet in the sky to install that light. But definitely get him on. He's a great person, great contributor to our community, and a great manufacturer in Massachusetts.
Well, I think that's one of the key pieces that, you know, respectfully is one of those kind of national themes, but is also relevant to Franklin, because if we didn't have those types of small businesses that are in some cases truly flying below the radar, I mean, we'll have some, if you will, you know, the EMCs or the Dells and Thermo Fishers, you know, some of the national brands, if you will, coming here as well. But there's an awful lot of those little ones, respectfully, that are making an impact in business. And that has impact, as you're indicating, certainly has impact on a Massachusetts level. But then while the local revenues certainly are impacted by that as well, in terms of their, you know, property tax, et cetera. So.
We love the big players, and don't get me wrong, love having Dell here in town and the other large manufacturers. But as I said earlier, 72% of the manufacturers in Massachusetts are under 25 employees, and they employ about 270,000 workers in Massachusetts, and they're at about $1.8 billion in gross domestic product.
Yeah, and that's where, if anything, the growth needs to come from, because clearly a company is not going to start one day and then be a $1 billion company the next. It just doesn't happen that way. You need to start, however, and then organically grow. And sometimes you really hit the spot properly, and your growth is, you know, hockey stick type. But you know, it takes time to do that. And yeah, that's clearly a growth piece is part of our Franklin discussion, as you're well aware, at the local level, because we need local growth. The Prop 2.5 just that is not cutting it, because it's not indexed to inflation. And inflation recently, in the last 8 to 10 years, has certainly hurt us. Never mind some of the gyrations that are going on now because of the federal moves.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the other things you did and has popped up, one of your relatively early chairs, I think it was a co-chair of higher ed. And I remember you took a tour of all the Mass schools, state schools, and I ended up joining you for one day. We in Worcester visited three of those locations, and some of the legislation that came out of that was to prevent or to build in some of the guardrails so that as institutions were running into financial difficulty, and unfortunately, you've now prepared the state and the communities, hopefully, because Hampshire and other colleges, unfortunately, are in that space where they're just failing because of clearly demographics. The demographics we knew 10, 15 years ago, that peak baby boom and then the baby boom, Gen Zs, whatever, the population has been disappearing and we're not growing it properly.
Well, it's a function of parents not raising big families like they used to. You used to have 3 to 10 kids, and now you're lucky if parents will have two. And that certainly was something that was projected years ago, and we knew we had to grapple with. But that legislation that you're talking about really had a local beginning here in Franklin, Massachusetts, when I got a call from a parent who had a child who was just completing his third year at Mount Ida College. And the dad called me and said, "Hey, my son, it's April, and he just got a letter from the president of the college saying that they're going to close in May. And he has nowhere to go for his senior year." He said, "How can that happen in a place like Massachusetts?" And I also worked with the late Paula Rooney on that particular issue, who was very concerned about the impact of a small college closing and what it would do for the industry as a whole. So immediately got together as the chair of the Higher Education Committee to try and craft a financial accountability bill that would require private colleges and universities to work with the Department of Higher Education to plan and to give adequate notice to students if they are in financial trouble. And this would, the idea was to have at least 18 months' notice for students who could make decisions about where to go. And I think you've seen since that bill passed in 2021, we've seen several closures of colleges, but not with the problems that were associated with Mount Ida closing. And that was a significant piece. And I've stayed, even though I transferred over to the Energy Committee, I stayed with higher education issues. And just last year, I was contacted by several of our colleges, Amherst College, Boston University, Curry College. They were all having problems associated with the Wage Act in Massachusetts. The colleges had a policy, a long-term policy of paying their employees on a monthly basis. And what happened was the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts decided a case a few years ago that said that no, under the Wage Act, they have to pay their employees every 2 weeks. And if you pay them monthly, you're paying them late. And we're going to tell you that the damages for paying somebody late are not the loss of interest on the money that they had, but it's going to be the actual paychecks going back 3 years. So Amherst College was in the tens of millions of dollars of exposure. Curry College called me and said, "Listen, if this SJC case goes through, Curry College is going to close." Harvard University was involved in it. They were facing a $3 billion loss as a result of that SJC case. So we actually took that all into consideration, worked with the colleges and the universities and the unions and everybody involved to craft some legislation that would protect them and keep them open. On the heels of enrollment declines, the last thing they needed was litigation that was going to further put them in the hole. So we were successful in getting that legislation last April, and that has saved a lot of these colleges and universities. And I'm happy that we're able to do that, and I was honored to be recognized by the Association of Independent Colleges and Universities for continuing work in higher education. I say I love that part of the work. Education is what brought me to the State House, and to be able to do these things to help kids further their education is been long the most honorable and the most exciting part of my time up here on Beacon Hill. So it was nice to get that recognition, but more importantly, it's nice to be able to do that work to give every kid in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts an opportunity to get a a some sort of credential beyond a high school diploma.
Yeah, I think it's appropriate that you coming representing Franklin as you are in Medway, but at least, there's a legacy before you with Horace Mann doing something similar. I wouldn't put you in the same classification yet. You still got a ways to go. I'm sure, some other historian will look back and say, there's some parallels there, but
I'm mindful of the big shoes that I have to follow because Horace Mann happened to be in the Massachusetts State Legislature before he became the Commissioner of Education. So I know he's watching down and saying, hey, preserve what I started in this Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Correct. Yeah, and that's one of the interesting developments that I'm closely following, having read a couple of books on Horace Mann. There's a subcommittee with the school looking at the Horace Mann legacy, how to best truly tell his story. Because, yeah, to your point, he was in the legislature before Secretary of Ed. He then was principal, not principal, president of the Antioch College. He also served in Congress for a period. There's aspects of the story that people don't fully appreciate and understand. And it's not a clean slate because some people would say, well, really? He did that? How does that jive with, quote, his legacy? So he was a man in those times doing what he could for the people.
I'm so excited that the community has come together and put together a group to really honor the legacy of Horace Mann and do it in his birthplace. I surprise people when I tell them that Franklin is the birthplace of Horace Mann, the home of the first public library in America, and that the intersection of that library and public education really has its roots and its foundation in Franklin, Massachusetts. So we believe in the power of education, and here we are in 2026. I'm hoping to continue that legacy of caring for education.
Yeah, it certainly is an opportunity creator for those who want to take advantage of it. And I think your efforts certainly on even on the Tri-County funding, et cetera, clearly that went through the Mass Building Association, but they're now building the newer school. I'm a little disappointed to the extent that I really wanted, I thought, because of the needs that we need, especially in the trades. We need more people, and yet the capacity is still going to be the same 1,000. But at least it's going to be the newer tools, the newer setup to truly prepare those folks to deliver the services that we're going to need as we continue to evolve and grow in this economy.
And I'll tell you what excites me about that Tri-County project, because as you are well aware, I was the chair of the Energy Committee for 4 years, and the Tri-County project came to fruition during my tenure there. And I had met with the officials there, and I had asked them what the plans were to power the building. And I was devastated to learn that they were going to, the plan was to power it using natural gas. And I said, you have this opportunity to build a flagship model school for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts by using alternative sources of power. Have you looked into geothermal technology? And the superintendent had told me, yes, we did, but it was too expensive. I said, well, look, I'm going to bring a team of folks in to the school to talk to you. They came in from the Mass Clean Energy Center. Let's talk about what financial opportunities are out there to help you pay for geothermal technology. And after a few meetings, they identified a way to not only pay for the geothermal, but they're going to save money in the long run by not having to pay for gas. And that project is going to repay itself in as short as 3 years. They won't have any gas bills. moving forward, and they will be a net zero facility, which is incredible. And I remember saying to the superintendent, I said, please, I said, as the chair of the Energy Committee and one who believes in the power of renewable sources, it would be embarrassing to see a landmark piece of construction done right in my district that doesn't take advantage of these. And kudos to them. They found the way to do it in an economically feasible way. It didn't increase the budget at all, and it's going to provide not only clean power for the school, but opportunities for students to learn how to manage renewable energy pieces. MassEEC has told us that there are going to be 38,000 jobs available in the next 10 years in the clean energy space. What better way to prepare them than to give them a facility that has all of the clean energy tools in it? So I'm very excited for that project. I can't wait for the school to open it. I've been up there to see it. It looks fantastic.
Nothing like a real-time opportunity to learn and learn by doing. For sure. So we touched on the budget. To come back to the budget, earmarks certainly can be, if you will, respectfully, somewhat problematic for some people. But as I understand it, as a percent of the overall budget, they're relatively minor.
It is relatively minor in terms of the overall budget picture, but it's critical for the individual districts. Like Franklin and Medway have specific needs that don't match what the needs are out in a small town out in Western Massachusetts or like the city of Boston. So the earmark process gives an opportunity for representatives and senators to tailor things for their particular district. We talked about the overall budget and the earmarks that were in there, but we also have a fair share supplemental budget, which we happen to actually enact on the floor of the House yesterday, and that is providing education and transportation money. But in terms of local needs, in there is $150,000 for the redesign and modernization of the Franklin Middle School library. That was a project that they had in line but didn't have a way to pay for it. We were able to get that money through the Fair Share Amendment. There's a CTE Teacher Access and Equity Fund that's going to help Tri-County with $50,000, and Medway's Burke Memorial School needs a new parking lot to help with moving vehicles around that facility, and we put $250,000 in the fair share budget. But let me tell you about a real sweet item that was in there, and I think I was sitting next to you when we went to the Benjamin Franklin Classical Charter School for the capstone
Capstone
project.
projects, yes, presentation.
One of the students who didn't present the day we were there, but she had reached out to me about these HEPA filters that she had done a project on. And, she was looking for a way to finance that particular project. So I had talked to her about perhaps doing a fundraiser to do it. I said, but let me see if I can get it into the fair share budget that we're doing. And yesterday, that was part of the fair share supplemental budget that we passed in the House. And there's $5,000 in there for her HEPA filters for the Benjamin Franklin Charter School. So an eighth grader came up with an amazing idea, had the fortitude and tenacity to reach out to her state representative and secured an earmark in the fair share supplemental budget. And I expect that the Senate's going to pass it today, and it'll be on the governor's desk before the end of today. And I fully expect that she will sign it, and her school will get that money along with all the other items that we talked about.
Yeah, and a couple of points to expand on that. One, I think with her fundraising and some donations, she ended up getting some filters for some number of classrooms, and clearly the funding now would expand that
Right.
to more classrooms.
It's
But the
going to
other,
cover every classroom in there. That's, I said, tell me what you need to get
how many
every.
more, how much more? Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
No. And then going back to the fair share too, clearly that was passed. And it seems to be, getting more than what was forecast, which is giving you an opportunity to provide additional funding in those critical arenas of education and transportation. But one of the other things that's still out there in some of the conversations is that created a drain and people were leaving Massachusetts. But I think the numbers are showing, and you would have access to those numbers, that those high income earners are not leaving. Clearly, if we're getting more and more money, somebody's sticking around.
Well, we had projected that we would raise $1 billion through this fair share amendment, when in fact we're hovering between 2 and 3 billion on an annual basis. I would say not only are they not leaving, but they're probably moving in because they see, it's not about how you have to save every dollar. It's how, what is your state doing to invest in making the Commonwealth a better place to live, work, and grow? And people are attracted to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts because we have the most talented workforce in the entire United States. We have great universities and institutions of higher education here. We have great research centers here. We have world-renowned medical facilities here. The quality of life is amazing in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And I think, we are losing some people, but I will tell you, it's become a magnet for all types of people. People want to come to Massachusetts because of all it has to offer. And we even see it here in the great town of Franklin that building continues to happen and people want to live here because it's a great place to live.
Yeah, the demand is still drawing, and realtors are saying, and there's an open house, the line's down the corridor, down the block with 60, 90 people, in some cases trying to get, the few properties that come on. Then generally they'll turn within a few days because the demand is so high. So,
No question.
for sure. And to that quality of life, which is one of the things that, at least since my retirement, I've been able to focus more on. Prior to that, I just focused on following the money, reporting on town council, school committee, FinCom, because that in my part time, that was the only time I had. Now that I'm fully retired, although some people say you're retired, aren't you working full time? Well, it seems like it, but I'm not.
You have a funny word for retirement or a funny way of viewing retirement because I see you everywhere.
Well, as a lifelong learner, there is no such thing really as retirement to that extent. But yeah, I mean, the community needs the information, and there's just so much good that's happening to be able to go around and see. I mean, so the farmers market opens on Friday. The high school graduates another class to go out and begin their next steps in their journey. Porch Fest on Saturday is a great celebration, and I think there's somebody that's going to be playing on a porch.
Yes, indeed. I'll be playing at 164 Main Street on Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. It's one of the more beautiful porches in Franklin, right there on Main Street, right next to the Common. If you want to see another side of your state rep, come down and see what I do with the guitar. So a lot of fun. It's a tremendous way to bring the community together. And I think this is the third year they
Third
have done
year.
Porch Fest. And I love seeing people walking around the community and enjoying just being together with one another, not having a cell phone or an iPad in their face. They're just talking to people and communicating and having fun together and having opportunities to move from stage to stage to stage, or porch to
Porch
porch to
to
porch.
porch.
That's accurate.
I think it's almost 50 performers across 30 something porches.
That's
So,
incredible.
and the weather's supposed to be great as opposed to last year, which kind of got dampened with some storms that came through. This
That's
year
great.
should be really good.
Yeah.
I remember the first year, a colleague and mine from the studio, we had trouble covering, I think we ended up covering 23 of the 40 porches at the time, but yeah, it's a worthy challenge to try and, at least get to your porch, another porch, another porch, and then it's all goodness, all goodness.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with having a lot of spots for a lot of people to be entertained and out there enjoying one another's company.
Right. And then that'll happen almost on a weekly basis with the farmers market. And then all of a sudden, well, this other thing called World Cup is here. So we've got a fan zone with a watch party for 2 nights on the 24th and 25th. And
You
then
know,
we're into the 4th of July.
you remind me on the fan zones. Now, there's another example of where earmarking and funding from the state budget helps out. A couple of months ago, we put $100,000 into the fan zone to take place here in Franklin. And just the other day, we put another $50,000 towards that fan zone to help with security, licensing, and all of the details that are necessary to make it happens. So it's another $150,000 that came to Franklin to help a local project. And I hope everybody takes advantage of it. And I thank you for publicizing the fan zone because I wasn't aware that I needed to get a ticket. So I secured two tickets through your Franklin Matters link.
Yeah, I wasn't aware until I saw that. It was like, oh yeah, let's grab the tickets. Because I'm trying to think, how would they merely manage the tickets? That's their issue. At least it gives them an idea of how many people are going to come
Sure.
to prepare. Because otherwise, the guesses are all over the place.
Right.
But when folks are certainly, Gillette is not that far, excuse me, Boston Stadium, we know it as Gillette. Some of the internationals coming to visit are going to have some challenges, but that's another story. But for those at least that can find, if they don't have a ticket, they can come here or the other one in Marlboro for a couple of nights before ours on the 24th and 25th and get to see what's going to be some fantastic soccer or
Sure.
football, depending upon which way you phrase it. Well, thank you for taking time to share some of your legislative stuff and then your cultural stuff. And, the summer is upon us. And, oh, you also have an election later this year, I think, don't you?
Yes, I am running for my eighth term. I feel like
Eighth
I just
term.
got there. But yeah, that I'm on the primary ballot in September 1, I believe, is the date of the
Okay.
primary election,
Right.
and I expect that without any competition on the Democratic side, I'll be the nominee and will be on the ballot in November to be the state rep for the 10th Norfolk District. It's been a great honor to serve. The past 4 years, I've dedicated myself to the position and delivered with constituent services, local aid, and some very impactful legislation. We talked about higher ed, but there's been energy legislation, health care, you name it. I've been on it and still have some gas in the tank and would love to continue representing the state.
Terminology, gas in the tank. I think
The
you
gas in the
want
tank is never going to leave, even though
to
I drive electric. I still refer to those electrons as gas.
People have trouble kind of changing the lexicon, staying up with it. Yeah. I mean, what would be the equivalent of, getting charged or whatever?
It's
It's
electrons.
electrons. Yes.
That's right.
Make those electrons power properly. Yes.
Yep.
Well, we'll probably get together as we do kind of that candidate rush later this year. But again, thank you for taking time today to share and certainly have a good rest of the day. And perhaps we'll see you on the porch on Saturday.
We'll see you then. Thank you so much.
And to the listeners, thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed. Certainly, Jeff's info, if you don't already know, we'll share that in the show notes so you can contact him, reach him out. He is responsive. And of course, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.